live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Starting with the Red Sox over the Yankees. Boston over New York 4-3 to win that series. And that means just one thing. Only one thing we can do right now. Alvin, drop a beat.
We all love the Red Sox. Always have and
what an absolutely intimidating hype track. How amped are you hearing that? Game 4 last night in New York, facing elimination and the possibility that the Red Sox would celebrate in their house again. The Yankees pulled out every last stop. They had Bucky Dent throwing out the first pitch. They had a starting pitcher in CC Sabathia who definitely knew when that game started. They had that stadium rocking. They had everything. They had all of that. But none of it mattered. And not because the Yankees aren't good. They are. Anybody who tries to tell you otherwise is a moron. You cannot suck your way to 100 regular season wins. They are good. They're really good. But the Red Sox are better. They're much better. And while Aaron Boone might be a good first-year manager, Alex Cora is just better. Much better. Who else is putting Brock Holt into the lineup in game 3 and then watching him hit for a cycle and then replacing that guy in the lineup for game 4 and then watching his replacement Ian Kinsler do this?
Pierce leading at third, the pitch swing, there's a shot to left field, Gardner going back, reaches up, jumps, it's over his head, and one hops the wall. Kinsler on his way to second base, and he is in there with a stand-up double, and the Red Sox lead it 2-0.
You know, it came down to this too. In that series, the Red Sox were clutch, the Yankees weren't. The Red Sox were masters of the two-out knock. The Yankees weren't. Alex Cora was not afraid to make a move with his starter, and Aaron Boone was, because for the second straight game, Boone left his starter in too long. CeCe is a warhorse. He's a legend. He's just shy of 3,000 strikeouts, 250 wins, but as much as the big fella wanted it last night, he just did not have it, and Aaron Boone waited too long for confirmation. Cora, on the other hand, worked his bullpen to perfection, including bringing in Chris Sale in the eighth. You see, that's the thing. Not all of Cora's moves were obvious. Some of them could backfire in a huge way. Like if Ian Kinsler doesn't have an RBI double and a run scored, you know Sox fans are lighting Cora up for taking out Holt. And if Sale doesn't have a dominant eighth and he gets into trouble because he's not used to coming out of the pen, then Cora gets lit up for that too. But not by his players. They would never light this guy up. They love this guy, and they speak the truth about him. Check out what Rick Porcello had to say to Jeff Passan after the game. Quote, "For somebody who's managing in his first year, it sure doesn't feel like it. He seems like he's been doing this for a long, long time. What we feel in this clubhouse is how much he really, truly, genuinely cares about us." He went on to say, quote, "We may be ball players, maybe not the most educated people in the world, but you sense those sort of things. Who's leading the helm, and I can't say enough good things about him. I'm so grateful to be here, to be playing for him. It's not bull bleep. It's not anything other than I love the fact that I'm playing for Alex Cora and the Boston Red Sox right now," end quote. I mean, there it is right there. This is in large part why Cora's moves do pay off. This is why Chris Sale told Cora that he wanted to come out of the pen last night, even though the last time he did it, it was a disaster, but it worked last night. Now, instead, the most obvious move that actually put the Red Sox in trouble was when they turned to closer Craig Kimbrell in the ninth. And this dude nearly puked all over the infield. The 7-time All-Star came in with a 4-1 lead. He immediately walks Aaron Judge on 4 pitches. Then he allows a knock to Didi Gregorius. Now the huge offseason acquisition comes to the plate with a chance to tie that game with one single swing.
2-1, nobody out, 1-2. Swing and a miss, strike 3, got him. Got him to chase the curveball again. Stanton strikes out. There's one out in the ninth.
Go yard there against the Red Sox in the bottom of the ninth, and you are a legend for life. You'll never buy another drink in New York. You'll never buy another meal in New York. You'll never have to do anything ever again in New York. But Stanton didn't. Could have gone legend. Instead, he went to the bench. And it felt like the momentum was swinging back to Kimbrell. But Kimbrell wanted no part of that, right? He seemed bound and determined to blow this save any way possible, because he then promptly walks Luke Voit to load the bases. Then he hits Neil Walker to drive in a run. Sox fan is losing his freaking mind at that point. But give Kimbrel this. The guy did find new and different ways of crapping his pants at the worst possible time. And then comes Gary Sanchez, another guy who could seriously use some redemption.
The payoff pitch from Kimbrel to Gary Sanchez. Here it is. Swung on and hit high and deep to left field. It'll be playable for Benintendi. At the warning track, he'll make the catch. Gregorius will score. It's a one-run game, but the Red Sox now need one more out.
Just missed that. Just missed it. Fraction of an inch in a different direction on contact. Sanchez leaves the park last night, and he's in Monument Park this morning. But he just missed it, which set up this.
The 1-2. Swung on, tapped down to third, slowly hit, charging as Nunez. He fires to first, stretch, got him! What a play by Pierce! And the Red Sox have won the division series against the Yankees. However, Aaron Boone might challenge this call.
Bang, bang. Or was it? They go to instant replay. But they didn't need to. He was out. Only thing I wish that Angel Hernandez had been at first base for that final call instead of behind the plate. That would have been awesome. That would have been truly poetic. Almost as poetic as the Red Sox bumping this in the clubhouse after that game. Get it, fellas. That's the Red Sox clubhouse. They're playing New York, New York as they're popping champagne in New York, New York. Best troll job I've seen in a long time. I'll say it again. The Yankees are good. The Sox are better. Right now. Better team, better manager, better organization. They're just better. And they proved it again in your house, Yankee fan. Red Sox moving on. Jordan Cronkrite. Jordan, great to have you on the show. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Man, I'm great. Jordan, I am great. You had 23 carries for 302 yards, an utterly ridiculous day, and you came into that game against UMass with back-to-back 100-yard games. I've got to first ask, how were you feeling before kickoff? Did you have any idea yet something that special in you for that game?
Well, before I even get to that, I just want to know, how do I get racked? I just need to know.
Dude, I'll tell you how. You rush for 300 yards, you get racked. You're already racked, man. You don't have to do anything else. You're good, man. You're already good. You're all good. You're golden. That's cool,
thank
man.
Thank you. I mean, going into the game, to kick off, I did not expect that. I was just trying to help my team win. Wasn't that too many people at the game. It was a kind of quiet atmosphere. But I didn't expect us to not go out there and perform. But I definitely was not expecting that.
You might not have been expecting that, but I have to be honest. I expected that kind of answer from you because this is what you do. You give credit to the offensive line, and you're really humble about that. But the fact is, you had a 77-yard run in the third quarter, ninth longest in school history. You had a 76-yarder right after that, which was 10th longest in school history. Can you take me through those plays? What did you see on them?
Offensive line, they made a huge hole. I mean, all I had to do was just run through his contact, and we saw the same, like, exact plays on film and how the safeties are going to fit and how he's going to try to tackle me. And then once I got to him, I knew what move I was going to do. I knew he was going to try to shoot at my legs. And then after that, I just ran to the end zone. I knew nobody was going to catch me, so.
We're talking USF football. They didn't have a chance. Now, so you're rolling in a game like that, and you're putting up numbers, and head coach Charlie Strong keeps you out there to give you a chance to maybe stack a few more. What did it mean to you that he allowed you to have that opportunity?
It's a great honor. I'm really appreciative of him letting me stay out there and break a record. Shows that he has a lot of trust in me, and he's appreciative on his side of how much hard work I put in the offseason and during the week in practice.
So what's he been like to play for so far?
Great coach, amazing coach, players coach, and he's always looking out for the team, and he wants nothing but the best for us, and I would never trade another coach in for him ever.
Bombas has totally re-engineered socks with comfort innovations that add up to a way more comfortable pair of socks. 2 years of R&D led to multiple improvements of the sock design, performance, and comfort. Now, you want to know the truth? These socks feel like butter. Straight freaking butter. And one pair sold equals one pair donated. This is the absolute coolest part about doing business with Bombas. One pair sold means one pair donated. You buy one, they give one. So it's essentially like you're the one donating. I would never tell you to do something that I don't do myself. Bombas are the socks that I wear every single day. I'm wearing them right now, and they are extremely comfortable. And right now, you get 20% off your first order if you go to bombas.com/Rome. That's BOMBAS.com. You'll get 20% off your first order. Bombas.com/Rome, codename Rome, best pair of socks ever. You know, Jordan, your offensive coordinator, Sterling Gilbert, talks about how much he likes the fact that you bring a calmness to the field. And it seems like being calm on a football field would be like the hardest thing to do because there's so much chaos around you at all times. But the very best running backs all seem to have that calmness about them. They seem to have that patience as well. Where does that come from for you?
Our running back coach, Sean King, he preaches to us every day in practice just to be calm under chaos and being able to function when things aren't going right. And even when they are going right, you got to be able to channel that energy and keep that focus and be locked into the game. Because as you've seen during the season, like some of our games, not a lot of things have go well for the offense, but we have to be able to go play by play and try to execute and do our job. So that's what I try to bring to the room, especially with me being one of the older people on the offense. I just try to bring that to the room.
Jordan Cronkite joining us, coming off a 302-yard rushing day. You know, you started your career at Florida. For those who don't know, you end up going to USF. How did you end up at USF, and what appealed to you about that situation?
I had a smidge of success at UF. Met a lot of people, had great relationships with people over there. Then I decided to leave after my second year. Ended up getting in contact with Coach Strong because he recruited me when he was at Texas. And then Coach Cogdell was also here. And then Coach King, he knew my high school coach. And then I got in contact with Coach King. And then we set up a day to come for a visit in the spring. So then I came on a visit and then saw how the players interacted with the coaches. And then I also knew some of the players that were here. So then I just got a feel from them. And then I sat down with my parents and then weighed pros and cons of other schools that I was looking at the time. And then I felt like this was the best place for me, and so that's how I ended up here.
Now, of course, you had to sit out for a year, and that's got to be a different kind of experience for somebody like you. It would be easy to get frustrated, maybe get down, but you had a role on the scout team, and it seems like you really embraced it. What did you learn in that process, and how did you approach that year off?
I approached the year off like I was still on the regular side of the ball on offense. The coaches would tell me just to go out there and practice as if I had a game on the week coming up and try to work on my craft. Even though I'm not playing this year, I didn't want to sit back there and lose some of the ability that I had and just slacking off and not being it mentally and physically. And I just took it as a challenge to myself just to get better. And then also on the other side, I pushed my teammates and give them a look because I was doing a service for them to give them a look for the upcoming game.
So USF wins 10 games last season, and you're out quickly. You're 5-0 this year. When I've talked to Charlie Strong in the past, we've talked about the upside and the potential of the program. So where do you come out? How good can USF football be year in and year out?
With Coach Strong being our coach, sky's the limit. Like I said, he's a great coach. Right now we're sitting 5-0 going into Tulsa week. The best thing about that is we haven't played our best game yet, so we have a lot to improve on, and I'm really excited about that.
Jordan, before I let you go, let me ask you this. I mean, you're having a lot of success. You're putting up crazy numbers, stacking crazy numbers, and you're still really humble about the whole thing. You give credit to the offensive line. You say they make your job easy. All you have to do is run a straight line. I mean, if anybody could have a big head out of this thing, it would be you, but you don't. Where does the humility come from?
Ultimately, it comes from my mother, my father, and my grandmother. My dad had a pretty good job, and my grandmother did as well. They work really hard because I have six siblings, and I'm the second oldest, and my siblings look up to me, and I just try to do what I'm supposed to do. I don't take credit for anything. Like, I could easily take credit as me being top dog in my house and my family, but I don't ever do that. And I could do that on the football field as well because of what I've done so far here at this school. And I don't ever take credit for that because I'm just doing what I'm asked. And there's other people putting a lot of hard work into it as well. And they're just trying to help me be successful. So I think that's where it comes from.
All right, so to answer the question, how do you get racked with an answer like that? That's how you get racked. And also, 302 rushing yards isn't a bad thing either. 23 carries and a conference record. 302 rushing yards. USF is 5-0. They're 1-0 in conference. They're at Tulsa on Friday. Running back Jordan Cronkright, my guest. Jordan, great job. Really nice to have you on, man. Good luck.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Listen to this. No matter how big or small your team is, Ferguson has a winning game plan for pro contractors with thousands of plumbing repair parts, knowledgeable associates, and the largest national footprint in the game. When the pressure is on, you can count on Ferguson. All right, continuing through hour number one, let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys. They have been off the radar. Jerry's not having that. Jerry needs you looking at him and talking about him. And I'm here to do exactly that. It's Wednesday, and we're still talking about the fact that Jason Garrett punted on 4th-and-1 from the Houston 42 in overtime. So at a time when head coaches are more and more aggressive on 4th down, the guy with a massive offensive line and Ezekiel Elliott in the backfield decides to play the battle for field position. He does that instead, and he craps out. So let me ask you this. What is the point of having one of the best lines in football and one of the best running backs in football if you're not going to use either one of them? Take the swing. Go for it. Make it, and then you've got a chance to win that game and maybe even save your season. But if you miss, you can stand at the podium and say, look, I had so much confidence in my offensive line. I've got one of the best backs we've ever had here. I knew we were going to make it. I'd make that call 10 times out of 10 times. That's how you handle that. You go for it, and if it doesn't work out, you just get up at the podium and you say that. Your guys will love you for it. They'll want to play harder for you because they knew that you had faith in them. Instead, by not going for it, he proves he's got no confidence in his team at all. He bailed. I mean, such a bad decision that even Jerry Jones, a.k.a. Jason Garrett Sr., took a break from comparing his offense to the Rams' offense to actually question a Jason Garrett decision. Jarrett said, quote, "We were being outplayed there, not out-efforted, but we were outplayed. But it's time for risk at that particular time. That's not second-guessing, but we were taking some risk, too, at certain points in the game." End of quote. That's pretty rich. Jerry wanted to make sure that you knew that he was not second-guessing his genius coach. So it's not a full-blown crackback, but compared to the cheerleading that he normally does for Garrett, that's a huge departure for Jera. And then given the heat that Garrett has taken for that move, again, the guy punted on 4th-and-1 in overtime in the other team's territory in a game that he had to have. And then he ends up losing that game on a field goal. You think that knowing all that and the fact that we're still talking about it on Wednesday, that he's still getting hammered for it, you'd think that he would reconsider. You'd think that he'd say, you know what, I'd like to add that one back. You'd think that, but you'd be wrong.
It just made sense to us, to me at that time, to go ahead and play field position.
Yeah, it's great, Jason. That's awesome. Because it doesn't make sense to anybody, anywhere, at all. It doesn't make sense because since Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott have arrived in Dallas, your team is 18-for-19 on 4th-and-1. Were you not aware of that stat? Were you also not aware that your team did convert one earlier in the game too? Or did you know all of that and just freak out and coach scared when it mattered most in a game that you had to have? The only thing worse than not running a play, punching the other guy in the face, and finishing is all the hair splitting that this guy's doing right now in trying to explain it. You see, Garrett wants you to know that it wasn't what it appeared. He wants you to know that it wasn't actually 4th-and-1.
It was a long one. I was standing right there, so it was probably 1.5 yards when we had it. We had a play that we liked, And unfortunately, they did a good job coming in and stuffing that. And actually, I think we probably lost a little bit on the third down play. So it got you to fourth and really kind of close to two.
Pretty courageous. He just said it wasn't actually one. It was a long one.
It was a long one.
And maybe even actually fourth and two. And credit to them for the way they set up for it. I mean, none of this, hey, you know what? I don't care. We need to get it. We've got the line. We've got the back. We've got the quarterback. We're going to line up and punch him in the face. And then we're going to get the first down, move the chains, and win the game. Get the hell out of here. None of that. No. That's him splitting hairs and saying, you know, to be fair, it really wasn't fourth and one. It was a long one. All right. All right, coach. I guess that's why they pay you the big bucks. No, wait. Actually, why do they pay you the big bucks? I mean, don't get me wrong. I want everybody to make as much money as they possibly can. I'm never looking to rip a guy's job from him. But why does Jason Garrett have a head coaching job? Because Dak Prescott is not getting better. He's getting worse. You'd think that having a former quarterback as your head coach would help, but it hasn't. The offense is somehow less than the sum of its parts. That's not a good reflection on the head coach. You'd think that having a guy who ran an offense for a while would help, but it hasn't. So exactly what does this guy do well? What does Jason Garrett do well? Better yet, what does Jason Garrett do at all aside from clap? But damn, dude can clap. My man can clap the hell out of it. If you're in a pressure situation and you need a head coach to come up with a perfect clap, you call on this redheaded clapper. Man, that dude can turn the lights on and off in three states with the way he claps. So, why doesn't Jerry Jones do something? It's his team. Why doesn't Jerry do something about his coach? Why does Jerry Jones not care? Why do Cowboy fans care more about the fact that their team sucks than their owner? That's the greatest mystery of all. This is the same guy who ran Jimmy Johnson out of town. Ran Jimmy Johnson out of town, but he keeps Jason Garrett around. Ran Jimmy Johnson the hell out of town, but keeps Jason Garrett around. And why is that? Because Jimmy was getting all the credit and Jerry was getting none. Never mind that Jimmy built the team and was ripping Lombardis like every single year. No one was looking at or talking about Jera. Well, they are now, Jera. And what they're saying is, you really don't want to win that badly. Because if you did, you'd hire a head coach who gave you the best opportunity to give you those wins. But what would that mean? That would mean you'd have to stay the hell out of his way. That would mean you'd have to let the head coach do it his way. And you're not having that, are you, Jera? I get it. It's your team. Do whatever the hell you want. Just don't tell your fans you're doing everything in your power to win because you're not. And Cowboy fan, if you think that Sunday's punt and eventual loss is enough to get Garrett fired, I would not hold your breath. If this guy has not been fired yet, there's no telling if or when he will ever be fired. He'll just keep on clapping his way to 8-8 every single year. And after all, why should Garrett sweat a terrible decision like that? This guy knows he's essentially unfireable. He knows it. Why should he go for it? Why not play the field position battle? What's the worst thing that could happen? He's not getting fired. We know this. Cowboy fans, seriously. I mean, seriously, don't just sit there and not respond. What do you think about that? Fourth and one from the other guy's 43.
It was a long one. I was standing right there.
My bad. Fourth and one and a half. Fourth and one and three quarters. Fourth and one and five eighths. Fourth and a yard and three quarters.
Close to two.
That's different. It's close to two. Bad spot. It's not really fourth and one. I'm being really unfair. It was actually almost 2 yards.
Close to two.
Yeah, and you got a badass offensive line, allegedly. Ezekiel Elliott, and you're still not going for it. See, like, if it had been fourth and a 16th, that'd be a totally different deal. But it was fourth and close to two. How bad does that sound, Cowboy fan? Do you really want a coach who's going to say, yeah, but it really wasn't fourth and one? It was really fourth and close to two.
It was a long one. I was standing right there.
Cameron Jordan. Cam, nice to have you on. How are you? Good morning.
I'm good. Appreciate you having me on.
It's great to have you on. Thanks for doing this again. You know, I want to go back to Monday night since you've got a little bit of time off. And we could start with Drew Brees, but first let me ask you about the defense, because it was another really strong performance, and especially in the defensive line. You've talked about how you want that D-line to be the spear and not the tip of the spear. What do you mean by that, and did that happen on Monday night?
You know, D-coordinators always say that, you know, we have to be aggressive, and that, you know, the defensive line starts up front with the defensive line. You got to be the tip of the spear. I was like, why do I have to be the tip of the spear? I was like, I'll be the whole weapon. So I just feel like it encompasses all of our defensive line. When we say we want to be the complete weapon, we're talking about both edges being set, the interior being pushed, not allowing quarterbacks to scramble and or step up through a pocket. I put the task to our D-line every week, just like our D-line coach emphasizes that we have to be able to take over a game, and I think we did just that this past week.
Cameron Jordan joining us. You did defensively. In fact, when the defense is rolling like that and you're getting the offense back the ball and the offense is scoring the way it is, how much fun is that, and do the two units feed off each other?
Oh, for sure. I mean, when you talk about, you see Mark Ingram come back and the boost he gives the offense, you see, you know, Mike T going off the way he does, AK going off the way he does. Drew set their record. I mean, there's no possible way the defense can't be fed that high level of energy. And just for us to try and get back, I mean, you know, we had the first three and out of the series, gave the ball back, and it was, you know, lights out, touchdowns after that.
Cam Jordan joining us once again. Now, you had a monster year last year, and then you came into this year, and you've already got five sacks this season. I'm curious, what did you work on in the offseason that you're applying this season? What's been the biggest difference?
Just the natural ability to keep progressing. I'm always looking to better myself in terms of playing the boot better, draw better, focusing more on, you know, exactly the technicalities of the line, how they want to set to, from, you know, whether they set away from a back and pass pro, or is it any formation that they seemingly seem to change up their pass protection. I'm just trying to get one more hint. If I can get, you know, a half step faster, then I'm going to close in a lot more sacks. And I've already missed about three of them, and I'm kicking myself in the foot. I missed, you know, Matt Ryan sack late in the game. I missed a Eli Manning sack, and I missed an Alex Smith sack already. So I'm over here really irritated at myself, which is only going to keep motivating me to try and be better for the next week.
Hey, Cam, is that how it is? Do you always think about the ones that you didn't get as opposed to the ones that you did get?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can't complain about the meal you had. You can only complain about the meal you're looking forward to.
Cam Jordan joining us. You know, so your whole goal is to keep progressing, keep adjusting, keep getting better, but at the same time, they're making it harder on you and guys who have jobs like you, because they're putting in rules that make the job so much tougher. How much harder, in fact, is your job right now to avoid penalties than when you first came into the league?
When I first came into the league, you were allowed to, you know, almost hit a quarterback any way you needed to, as long as it wasn't low. They then took the rule where you could hit them low, and then they then re-implemented the rule where you could hit them low if you were throwing into a quarterback. I feel that, you know, sometimes the game is impaired by some of these rules, but again, this is the day and time that we live in, so we have to adjust. It's not like I can go out there to Reggie White, you know, offensive lineman, and slap him in the ear hole and, you know, swing past him that way. There's rules protecting players in general that are that weren't present in years past.
That's tremendous. It's not like it was with Reggie White, where you could slap a guy in the ear hole and take care of your business. Hey, Cam, I know you watch a lot of film, and you watch film of guys who play the game. Have you studied Reggie White? And when you look at the way he used to do it, and obviously he could get away with things that you can't get away with right now, when you look at him, what did you see? What would you take from his game?
Just that pure passion. I mean, you know, when Reggie White was over at the Packers, they won a Super Bowl, and, you know, you say Brett Favre, but defensively, or, you know, anybody would have to realize that the heart and soul of that team was really Reggie White. Just the way that he approaches the game, the way that he would dominate offensive linemen throughout the entire line. I mean, he could rush into five-tech, three-tech, and even seemingly line up at a nose and do work. I'm not saying I imbue my game from him, but I feel that if I could take anything away from him, it's just that ability to be overly aggressive at times.
Cam Jordan joining us. All right, Cam, another guy who's got that passion. Obviously, your quarterback, Drew Brees. Go back to Monday night. What was your reaction when he got the all-time passing record?
I keep trying to say, like, I feel like I underappreciate this man because I've been witnessing him every day for the last 8 years during seasons. For what he's done, I mean, there's no argument to be made that he's one of the greatest of all time. And when you talk about what he did in the first half, I mean, they turned in 300-some yards of offense in the first half. I don't know what to tell you from that point. You know, he is one of the greatest to do it.
See, the thing is, though, Cam, and you wrote a piece for the Players Tribune a few weeks back, and you said that he doesn't get the credit he deserves. I mean, nobody can dispute this. He absolutely is one of the greatest to do it, but whenever the talk turns to the greatest to do it, his name is not necessarily on that short list. Why do you think that is?
I have no idea. You know, at some point, I'm sure, he's tuned out all negative publicity or whatever, or that's not giving the accolades that he so deserves. It blows my mind that, you know, he can throw for 5,000 yards and has done so for four or five different times throughout his career, and yet he still hasn't been a league MVP. I mean, there's things that just don't add up.
Cam Jordan's my guest. What about him in practice? As an example, you wrote that he'll throw a pass in practice that looks pretty good to you, but if it's not perfect, as an example, how does he react to that?
Yeah, I mean, as a defensive end, I'm like, oh, it's a deep ball. The caught it in stride. He's running with it. And then you look over and Drew's popped off his lid and he's overly irritated at the way, like, you know, he's talking to himself like, come on, Drew. Like, I need more here. And it's like, again, outside looking in, and he's like, that was a nice ball. You know, and the way Drew didn't like, you know, whether he could have thrown a little bit farther so, you know, the receiver didn't have to maybe take a step slower or didn't have to reach over his right shoulder instead of looking directly in front of him. I couldn't tell you. I just know that I'm like, Drew's on his Drew hype again. I love it because when he's motivated like that in practice, then you can only imagine what's going to happen during the game.
Cam Jordan, my guest. I love that. Listen, you talk about guys who've done it a long time. Also in that same Players Tribune piece, you ranked the top seven players in the NFC South. And, of course, you had Julius Peppers on that list. I mean, when you look at this guy, he's in his 17th season in a sport where most guys do not make it to four. When you look at him in season 17, how do you explain what he's done for as long as he's done it and still doing it at a high level? How do you explain that?
I mean, what did he turn to, like 11 sacks last year? I don't want to go all fan guy on you, but as a avid lover of defensive ends and, you know, the greats, he's one of them.
Dude, he is one of them, but 17 years to be that guy, that size, that athletic? I mean, I can't make any sense of this. And I know if I can't, or I know if you can't, none of us can, right? And I don't even know how you explain that, except maybe desire. Now, also, in your write-up on Alvin Kamara, this is great now, you wrote, quote, these mid-90s babies are just built differently. Like, I guess I'm one of the older guys on the team now. I'm an 89 baby. I like my retro stuff, light windbreaker jackets, like the Nike and Reebok ones. I've got some old Speedline joints. I rock fanny packs. My fanny packs are dope. Live colors. I've got a speaker in one of my fanny packs. If I want to go retro, I can. I can be overly retro. I mean, dude, there is so much to break down in that. But first of all, how do you see these mid-90s babies versus the guys like you from 89? What's the biggest difference?
You know, I'd like to say the 90s babies sort of pride themselves on being different. And I've had this conversation in so many different ways. You know, everybody wants to be an individual and identify themselves as an individual. But at the same time, if everybody's different, what is separating you from everybody else? Hmm. It's just a sort of a revolving conversation I've had, you know, with Marcus Davenport and with AK and a couple of the younger DBs. And it's pretty funny to have it. But, this is something I'm just going to leave in the locker room.
See, too bad you said that because you know I was going to say to you, really, what do they say? What's their side of the conversation? What's their response?
It goes into different situations. So whether it be like, bro, you just a West Coast cat, and you know, AK is from the South, or you know, Marcus is from Texas. It breaks down in different ways. We've had it a couple different times, but when it gets aggressive, like I said, I just leave it for locker room talk.
Cam Jordan, my guest. You rep the West Coast, man. You got to stay strong with the West Coast. All right, how about this? Can you talk about this then? If you can't talk about that, can you talk about this? The fanny pack. People want to mock fanny packs. People want to clown fanny packs. You're loud and proud about your fanny packs. What is it about that fanny pack life that other people just do not understand?
I got a speaker in my fanny pack. My fanny pack
right.
is hella live.
Right.
You know, I got personal speaker on me at all times. And not to mention, you know, as a dad, I could definitely have had a diaper and some ointment in there, you know, if I need to do a little spirit change. but it's just overly convenient. And, you know, I feel like my dad had one. I think I stole one from him. I got a nice, you know, a super, I call it a super late 80s situation, or maybe it's early 90s, with that vibrant aqua teal color that he's got. But I've got some dope fanny packs. Now, I'm not rocking them the way these 90s kids are, over the shoulder or off the shoulder. I'm going to leave that to them. I'm a traditional fanny pack around the waist kid.
Yeah, but Pops, I mean, did he have a fanny pack with tunes? And when you roll out with that fanny pack with tunes, how do people react? I mean, is it instant awe and respect?
For sure. You know, back in the early 90s when he was rocking fanny packs, it was just, you know, something you rock off the waist while you were training or something like that. At this point, I've got a speaker in mind. I've got Bluetooth. They didn't have Bluetooth back then.
Hell no, they didn't.
So there's no way he had a speaker in there.
That is so good.
But, no, you know, when I walk around and it's playing, there's like, everybody seems like, you know, they didn't know it was possible to put a small speaker in a fanny pack. I'm like, yeah, bro, that's definitely my steez.
That is. Cam, stay strong. Don't change. Don't ever, ever change. He's the Saints nominee for Walter Payton Man of the Year. He is a first team All-Pro, three-time Pro Bowler, and a good friend of the program. Cam, great to have you back. Appreciate you very much.
Hey, much appreciated. Thanks for having me on. As always, it's been a blessing.
But I'm talking about that blaze that needs extinguishing. There's an even bigger one, not the one in the Bronx, but the one across town, the one involving the G-Men. It's been a hell of a week for the Giants. Odell Beckham hops on ESPN with this guy, Lil Wayne, basically called out his quarterback for not being able to throw the ball downfield. Graham Gano drops that 63-yard dagger into the boys in blue. That drops them to 1-4. Eli once again found out that stepping in front of a mic and cracking back is the worst idea imaginable for him. Now, you think Eli would have learned that after he hit Jalen Ramsey with a no, no. Who? Blast?
Do you have any comment on that or any retort?
No. Who?
He did that to Jalen Ramsey. No, no. Who? He did that. But even after that disaster, Eli stepped to the mic again and stepped right into the wood chipper when he went with this absolutely lame crackback after being asked about OBJ and Lil Wayne and their sit down that the entire NFL was talking about. Eli's response was, and I quote, "I don't watch Lil Wayne that much," end quote. Uh-oh! It's a bad idea, Eli. Scratch that. Worst idea. Because you may not watch Lil Wayne very much, but the rest of the planet does. My dude has 43 million followers on social. My man is a network unto himself. A social network, an over-air network, that is such a colossal number. 43 mil on social when you combine his Twitter and his Gram following. And obviously, probably several million of them ran it right back to Wayne, who had this slow motion fire waiting for Eli on the Gram.
Eli, man, every time somebody badmouth you, I'm the first one to back you up, man. I'd be like, man, he got two rings before his brother, blah, blah, blah. And here you talk about you don't watch Lil Wayne much. That's fine. That's fine. I'm cool with what you, I don't care what you watch or what you listen to or nothing like that. But you know, man, it's hometown love, man. You ain't got to do me like that, man. I didn't say anything bad about you, man. Dang. So I ain't going to say nothing bad about you now. But anyway, you still hometown love. I f*** with you, Eli. It's all good. You ain't got to watch much of me, but you can't listen if you could. You probably need to, the way you've been playing. You probably need to bang some Call to Five before a game.
So let me set the stage for you. Wayne's sitting in some kind of swaggy nightclub, rocking a spliff the size of a yardstick. And by the time he's done with a 7-part gram video, he's got both Eli and my man Frank Isola in a body bag. Wayne dropped a Rikers Island reference, told Frank to keep his name out his mouth. He then came for Eli, Archie, Pinky, and even Cooper. 10-8 round. 10-8, Eli on his back, a white towel in the ring. And at this point, the best thing that I can say about the Giants is they finally cut bait on top 10 pick Eric Flowers after he went Matador one last Sunday in a Giants jersey. When gassing a top 10 pick that was supposed to be your left tackle for a decade is the best thing that happened to you this week, you know it's been a horrible week. Because right now it's a straight-up clown show in the Meadowlands. And what's it say about the team dynamic in the Giants locker room that when the first three tracks on the practice mix yesterday were Lil Wayne songs, the dude just body bagged your 2-time Super Bowl winning quarterback. And it seems like the team has got Wayne's back and not the quarterback. It's pretty amazing. Like, I thought that circus was supposed to leave town with McAdoo. The only good thing I could say about the Giants right now is that their division is straight up terrible. The Redskins are sitting on top of that division, and they just got sandblasted by Drew Brees and the Saints. All four teams in the least have given up more points than they've scored. Nobody's above 500. And the Giants are only one win back of the division leader, and they've got exactly one W. Hey, listen, I said the Giants were right when they paid Odell, and they were. Even if this dude is speaking his mind and making things a little bit uncomfortable right now, if you give that guy that kind of cash, you best believe he's going to have a say in how things are run. Even if it's some truth that you don't want to deal with. Hey, look, there's a reason why that team was 3-13 last year. And it wasn't just the 10W30 that McAdoo was rocking in his lettuce, nor the garbage bag size suits that he was wearing. The team was garbage. But damn, if Giants leadership thought that a new head coach and a fresh coat of paint were enough to keep this thing on the rails, man, they found out the hard way. It's going to take more than that. Pinky's little bro went up against Lil Wayne, and that went as badly as you'd expect. Lots to cover with Sean Casey. Sean, it's so good to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
Romy, what's up, my man? How you doing, brother?
Sean, I'm great. I am so awesome. How about you? How are things?
Things are great, man. Things are great. Loving the postseason so far, and yeah, it's been awesome.
It is so fun. All right, so first things first. As a former first baseman, Sean, what did you make of Steve Pierce's stretch at first to make sure that he got that final out of last night's Red Sox-Yankees game?
Oh, man, did they need that out. Kimbrel was in trouble, and Nunez made a great play. But, you know, you don't get enough credit over there at first base. Pierce did a great job kind of catching the right corner of the bag, making sure he stretched out, kept his foot on the base. I mean, you know, as a first baseman, it's textbook play, and it was a great play by Pierce.
We're talking to Sean Casey. You know, Sean, the Red Sox, they obviously have a lot of talent. We all know this. But the players after the game were talking so much about the chemistry and how much they love and respect Alex Cora. How valuable is that to have that kind of level of love and respect for your manager? And what's that do to the clubhouse?
You know what, man? AC is one of my good friends, and I played with him in 2008 in Boston. You know, we were on the bench together all the time, and I remember sitting there with him, and he always saw the game a little different. And I always remember telling him, like, man, I hope you manage one day because, like, you see it differently. But he's also a great guy. Like, he was one of those guys. So I knew when he took over as the manager, he'd be that players-type manager, and the guys would love him. And you know, it's turned out that way. And you could just see it, you know, in the dugout, in the clubhouse with those guys. And I loved the story, you know, last night when he brought in Sale. You know, he said something like, turned to the guys, like, we're bringing them in, fellas, like into the dugout. And, you know, I think those guys are like, here we go. So, you know, Alex knows how hard the game is, and he understands what it was like to be a starter and a bench player. And those things that he brings to that team are invaluable.
Sean Casey joining us. All right, Sean, you also called your shot. You said that Alex Bregman would homer first in game one of the Cleveland-Houston series. And sure enough, this is what happens. He goes on to hit nearly 600 in that series. He had a couple of home runs. What do you make of how this guy has shown up in the postseason?
You know what? I said it last year in the postseason, especially, you know, when he came up with this big hit after big hit in the postseason. Like, he's playing for keeps. You know what I mean? Alex Bregman's one of those guys, man. He's coming for you. There's a chip on his shoulder for whatever reason about the game, and I find that the guys that have the most chips on their shoulders usually are the guys that come through in clutch situations. And, you know, Alex Bregman this year just went to another level of, you know, he's a superstar player now. You know, he's a guy that's going to hit 30-plus home runs. He's going to drive in a lot of runs. He's going to come up big for you in the clutch. And, you know, look for him in this next round, you know, to continue to make some noise.
Hey, Sean, go back to that point. Like, the guys with the chips on their shoulders, how does that translate into coming through in the clutch? What do you mean by that?
You know what? You know why it translates, Romy? It translates, you know, it translates because nothing's come easy to these guys. You know, when guys have chips on their shoulders, hey, man, you're too small. You don't do this. You know, you don't run. Whatever it is, whatever the chips were growing up or in college, you know, you're not good enough and all that stuff. And if you look at a guy like Alex Bregman, not that big of a dude. You know, there's no doubt a chip on that guy's shoulder. He always talked about, too, like going number two and not going number one in the draft. I tell my kids all the time, collect the chips. You know, anytime, you know, somebody tells you you're not good enough, somebody tells you that, you know, you didn't make the team or, you know, you're on the bench, like, find a way to work hard, but collect the chips because eventually you'll need them. And Alex Bregman, you know, he's the guy that when the game's on the line, man, he's coming for you.
Man, I love that phrase, collect the chips, because one day you're going to need them. I mean, Sean, my favorite athletes of all time are the guys with the biggest chips on their shoulders, whether it's Bregman, Dustin Pedroia, Steve Smith in the NFL. I love guys like that. But here's what I don't understand. I understand how that chip can get you to the major leagues, get you to the NFL. But once you have success and you've made a ton of money and you've started to stack rings and such, how do these guys maintain that chip? Because I've seen guys keep these chips throughout their entire careers and ride them all the way into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, don't you love that? I totally agree with that, Romy. Like, the guys, because when the guys that have the most chips, I really believe, when they get there to the top level, they're always looking over their shoulders because they've been looking over their shoulders their whole life, right? So they're always playing for keeps, and they're playing to stay. Even if you're making $20, $25 million a year, it doesn't matter. Like, you still remember where you came from. You still remember how hard it was. You still remember the critics. And that fuels you. It's not the money and all that. The money comes because you play so well. It's the stuff that fuels the guys, the chips on their shoulders. It's just being great and coming at you and dominating until you can't do it anymore.
Collect the chips. Sean Casey joining us. And Sean, you told a story recently where you were on the road in Houston and you had some buddies who had come to town to watch that game. You homered off my man, one of my favorite guys, Jose Lima, and you wanted to share the moment with your buddies. What happened next, and what did the Astros make of that?
Well, you know what? My buddies used to take a trip every year, like four of my best friends from college. And the one year they took it to Houston, and we always joke around who the MVP and the LVP is of the trip, you know, least valuable player, most valuable player.
Right.
So I was joking with my buddies, and I said, listen, if I homer today, I'm taking the MVP of this trip home, you know, no doubt about it. And I end up hitting a changeup off Lima. I think I hit it like in the second deck. I was fired up, you know, and I was around third base, and they were the only guys, obviously, in the crowd probably cheering for the Reds and definitely me. And I pointed at them around in third base, right? And they were like, yeah, I was like, you know, and that was only those guys knew the point. And so the next inning, you know, I get over to first base, and I'm running out to first, right? I got my glove. I'm running out for the next inning. And Jeff Bagwell, who's one of my favorite dudes ever, like really took me under his wing as a young player playing in the same division with him. He gets on the top step. He's like, hey, Case. And I'm like, yeah, what's up, Bag? He's like, if you ever, ever point at somebody around the third base again, I'm coming out there. I'm going to tackle you myself and take you down.
Wow.
And he was dead serious. And I remember thinking, oh, my gosh. I was like, Baggy, it'll never happen again, bro. Like, I was trying to tell him. I wanted to tell him, like, listen, man, like, my buddies are here, and I was the MVP of the trip. You know,
right.
I was the MVP of the trip. My head off.
Can you imagine, like, Bags Sorry. And Biz? Hey, bros, you don't get it. I'm the MVP of the trip.
Dude, my college buddies are in town. We had a great time. That home run made me the MVP of the trip. You don't think that's cool?
Great. Sean, what about Lima? Was he in his own planet? God, I love Jose Lima, one of my favorites. Was he taking that all in, or was he too mad at himself? What did he think?
I think he was mad he gave up a homer. I think they had bat before. You know, he might have punched me out and did the, you know, Lima time shimmy shake off the mound. You remember Romy when he used to do that?
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Punch you out, do the slide off the mound and stuff. Lima was a great guy, man. He was a character, and, you know, I used to love his antics back then. His antics now would be no big deal. You know, back then they're like, oh, man, look what he's doing, you know?
Oh, no. I mean, we talked about that over and over again back then. So, Sean, where does that leave us? I mean, the celebration brings up something that's been an ongoing discussion in baseball, celebrations. The league released a commercial that seemed to encourage bat flips and celebrations. Are all the players on board with this idea, or do you get the sense that some pitchers still feel like that's showing them up and that's not going to be cool?
Wow, that's a great question, because I really do think that's been the question the last couple of years, especially when you go back a few years ago with the Batista bat flip. I think got the conversation really going. I think pitchers and the guys that are playing in this generation of guys, I think they're more lenient towards that stuff. I think the bat flips, the celebrations, getting caught up in the moment, because you see it more and more often. I think it's more fun with the guys looking at the camera like Bregman does when he comes in the dugout, and Jesus Aguilar, with the Brewers. But I still think there's guys that take exception to the bat flips and, some of the guys on the mound, I think a John Lester, an old school grinder type pitcher had a lot of success. Like, I would think he would still take to a bat flip or whatever. But, I think the younger players in this generation are really growing up, and the celebrations is not that big a deal anymore. And I'm kind of enjoying it.
I'm loving it, Sean. I just wonder, ultimately, will these guys age out and fade away? And by the way, who's to say that a pitcher can't stare a guy back into the dugout and celebrate himself?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Hey, listen, if you don't want the bat flip, maybe you could tell him, beat it. You just took 1, 2, 3. We'll see you later. You know what I mean? Like, at some point, it'll all be just – listen, at the end of the day, it's the entertainment industry. And, as long as you're not really, embarrassing somebody or disrespecting somebody and the rules change where it's okay, then why not? I'm kind of enjoying it.
Yeah, right? As long as you don't disrespect the guy or the game, why not? Listen, Sean, before you go, there's no way you come on the program and we don't talk about the Miracle League of the South Hills. The fall season's ongoing, and in fact, Saturday and Sunday is awards day. How has the fall season gone, and what is that awards day experience like for everybody involved, Sean?
Roman, you're the best, man. Thank you. You know what? It's, we have Miracle League of South Hills. You can go to miracleleaguesouthhills.org and help us out, check us out. We have over 350 kids. It just gets cooler and cooler every year. The fall in Pittsburgh is a beautiful time, and these kids come out and they get their medals on the last day. And, you'd have thought you'd give these kids like $5 million. You'd have thought they all won the lottery. So it's just a really, really cool time. And the fall season has been great for us, and it's just a special place, Romy, and I always am thankful that you do bring it up, because anytime we get awareness, it always helps us either raise money or just help out the kids.
Sean, you and everybody involved are doing such an amazing job. It's such a great, great thing. And if people listening right now would like to support the Miracle League of the South Hills, or they want some more information, once again, where do they go to get it? How can they help out?
Yeah, man, if you go to MiracleLeagueSouthHills.org. MiracleLeagueSouthHills.org, and there's a lot of different ways to get involved, online. And it's funny too. Our video last year that we put out for our big event, I called Bob Costas. I'm like, all right, Bob, listen. I'm like, I need a minute and a half of your voice, the voice over our Miracle League of the South Hills video. So it's just funny looking back. How you look back at life, and I never thought you'd have you talking about it, Bob Costas doing the video. It's kind of cool.
Two reasons, Case. It's because it's such an amazing cause and because you are the best dude ever. You can watch Sean on MLB Network's MLB Tonight. It's going to air live before and after every league championship series game and the World Series games as well. Sean, so good to have you back, man. Great to have you on the show.
All right, Romy, man. Great talking, bro. I'll talk to you soon, my man.
Jenna in Wisco. Hey, Jenna, what's up? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. What's going on?
Not much. Traveling right now.
Me or you?
What was that?
Are you traveling right now, or are you saying that I'm traveling right now?
I'm traveling right now.
Really? Where are you going?
We are going to Sheboygan.
Nice. All right, good.
Yeah.
All right, so what else?
What else? I'm eating macadamia nuts currently out of my fanny pack, actually.
Okay, now we're getting somewhere. So you've got a fanny pack.
Well, sorry, my daughter is in the background. I apologize.
All right, so you called me to tell me that you're part of Fanny Pack Nation, right?
Oh, for sure.
Uh-huh.
How come? My fanny pack is going all over the nation.
Okay, Jenna, thank you very much. Let's keep moving.
Good night now!